imagine people traveling from miles around and filling up sold-out arenas to watch people walk.
Yep, the sport was called pedestrianism, or competitive walking, and our next guest wrote the book on it. Matthew Algio joins us today, and his latest book is called Pedestrianism, When Watching People Walk Was America's Favorite Spectator Sport. Matthew, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, guys.
Well, how is something as basic as walking, how did it become such a huge spectator sport? Now, granted, this was a while ago, but what was the start there?
Yeah, it was in the 1870s and 1880s, and the short answer is there really wasn't much else for people to do back then for entertainment. We had an entertainment deficit in the United States in the couple decades after the Civil War. And what you had a lot of people moving into the cities, urbanization, mass migration to the cities, working people. And for the first time, people had a little free time on their hands. And in the 1870s, a guy named Edward Weston started walking exhibitions. He would try to walk, say, 100 miles in 24 hours, and people would pay 10 cents a piece to come watch him walk in circles to see if he could do this. And then competitors rose up. There was a guy named Daniel O'Leary from Chicago, said, well, I can walk 100 miles in 23 hours. And then Weston did it in 22. And finally, they decided we need to have a race to decide who is the world champion pedestrian. And the first big race took place in 1875 in Chicago. O'Leary and Weston walked for 6 days there. And it proved so successful that six-day races became all the rage for a brief period of time in the 1870s and 1880s.
And Edward Weston kind of got going on this whole thing on a bet, didn't he?
Yeah, he actually began his walking career with a bet in 1860. He made a bet on the outcome of the presidential election that year. Weston bet that Lincoln would lose. Spoiler alert, Lincoln wins. And so Weston ended up having to pay off the bet. The terms of the bet were that the loser had to walk from Boston to Washington in 10 days to see the inauguration in March of 1861. So Weston walked from Boston to Washington, and this became a real sensation, especially up and down the East Coast. Huge crowds turned out to see him just walk through their town, and a lot of bets were placed on whether or not he would make it on time. He was actually 4 hours late, but he had developed such a reputation, had become so famous from this, that after the Civil War, he was able to do these exhibitions that I talked about.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine today millions of people filling arenas like Madison Square Garden just to watch people walk around. By today's standards, it sounds like it could be the most boring sport ever. But I gather you have a lot of esteem for this. What is it that made this sport so exciting for people?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to be careful to judge. You know, we've had a lot of really boring Super Bowls, but people still watch. And why do they watch? Well, they like the commercials and they like the halftime show. And when you went to one of these great walking matches, it wasn't just to watch the people walk. There would be brass bands playing songs. There were, vendors selling everything from pickled eggs to roasted chestnuts. You had celebrities would show up. Chester Arthur, who was a future president, was a big fan. Tom Thumb from Barnum's act was a big fan. And so you kind of went for the spectacle as much as to watch these guys just walking in circles.
Well, in your book, you say these walking competitions, they could last for days. You talked about the six-day competitive walk.
Right.
How did the athletes continue to keep going for so long? I mean, how did they eat, sleep, go to the bathroom?
It was really an exercise in sleep deprivation more than anything. These guys would usually sleep about 3 hours a day, and they did it in increments. So they would sleep for 15 to 30 minutes several times during the day.
So that was allowed.
Yes. What they would do is they would have cots, even small tents, inside the track. And it was there they could retreat, they could rest. That's where they went to the bathroom. There was a chamber pot in there. And they would take their meals usually while they walked. They could eat and drink while they walked. And so they were in motion about 21 out of 24 hours a day. And so usually when you went, even if you went in the middle of the night, and that was one of the attractions of the sport, is that it was continuous, 24/7 for 6 days. And so a guy who worked a late shift, an overnight shift, shift workers could get off work at 7 a.m. or 11 p.m., and they could go to the great walking match and see it. And so there was always something to see.
Now, were these pro walkers, were they what you would call real athletes by today's standards?
It's funny. I interviewed several endurance athletes for the book, and they were all familiar with this. Yes, I would say that what they accomplished, especially considering the equipment they had, I mean, they didn't have good shoes, for one thing. They usually just did this in boots. You hear a lot of stories about their toenails falling off after a couple days. It was really a very rigorous athletic exercise. And these guys, in the end, were going as much as 600 miles over the course of 6 days. And even today, the people who have tried to replicate their feat, it's generally really only endurance athletes, triathletes, those kinds of athletes that can replicate what these guys did, 140 years ago.
Now, we're calling them guys, but were there women involved?
There were women.
Immigrants, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there were six-day races featuring women, and there were several very famous women pedestrians I talk about in the book. And the problem, though, was that the conventions of the time, of the Gilded Age, the Victorian conventions, required women to wear full-length gowns or dresses when they walked. they couldn't show their shapely calves. So it was a little more cumbersome for the women. It really wasn't fair. It was not an equal playing field for the women, but the women's races were quite popular in their own right.
You talk about the sport being involved in some seedy activities, which have a lot of modern-day resonance, things like doping and gambling. Can you talk about some of the seedy scene that surrounded this pedestrianism?
We had our first great doping scandal in pedestrianism in 1876 when Edward Weston, who we talked about earlier, was found to be chewing coca leaves while he walked, which apparently was he felt it was a stimulant that might give him some advantage. There really wasn't any rule against it, but it was definitely considered unsportsmanlike. And even more serious were the gambling problems. As it became more popular with the public, pedestrianism also became popular with gamblers, and gamblers colluded with some of the competitors to fix races. And this really diminished public interest in the sport.
Can you share a story or two about one of the most famous matchups from this era?
Yeah, Edward Weston and Daniel O'Leary, I guess, were the two most famous pedestrians of the time. And some of their walks took place at the first Madison Square Garden in New York. It was built by P.T. Barnum in 1874. And these races were six-day races. And there were other competitors as well, but O'Leary and Weston were the two main attractions. And there would be crowds of 10,000 a night. And that was the capacity of the arena at the time, 10,000 a night. And on one occasion, there were so many people that wanted to get in that they started to riot outside the arena. It was said to be the biggest riot in New York City since the Civil War draft riots about 10 years before. Wow. And so it gives some idea of the enthusiasm that these two competitors especially generated.
If you could go back in time, would you want to see one of these matches yourself? And would you like to see it resurrected today?
I think it would be cool if it was resurrected today, mostly because it would give my book a little push. But I do. I would love to go back. It's a shame. We don't really have any photographs. It's sort of the tail end of the era where newspapers and magazines all depended on artists to sketch drawings of this. So we really don't have a photograph of what it really looked like. And it was a very, like I said before, it was a spectacle. It was a colorful event. And it would be really neat to see it, to go back in time, obviously, to see it, but also to see it rejuvenated.
So what happened? What pushed competitive walking, pedestrianism, out of favor?
A couple of things, the scandals we talked about, but more importantly, in 1885, there was an Englishman named John Starley, and he invented the modern bicycle. Before that, the bicycles were those big, the ginormous front wheel and the little back wheel, penny farthings they were called. But John Starley invented the safety bicycle. It's the bicycle we know today with the two same size wheels and the drive chain. And these were much more fun to watch race for 6 days than watching people walk in circles. And really, it was just a matter of years before the great pedestrian, the great walking matches were replaced by the great six-day bicycle matches. Also, baseball became very popular by around 1890 and became a very popular spectator sport. And that also helped to kill pedestrianism.
But we do have what's now known as the Olympic sport of race walking. Did pedestrianism spawn that?
Yeah, it did. And competitive race walking was in the first Olympics. It may be the only track and field event that's been in every single Olympics. And so we do have, in a way, we have the logical heirs to O'Leary and Weston. Weston are the modern race walkers. They look funny swiggling their hips, going heel toe, heel toe. But that's a little bit what it looked like. These guys were akin, especially reading about how they walked. It sounds like they walked a lot like modern race walkers do.
Well, Matthew, thank you. You've shined a light on something we don't know a lot about today.
Can I get a plug in real quick? I'll be at Boswell Books in Milwaukee at 7 tonight.
Absolutely. Boswell Books tonight at 7 o'clock. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
We've been talking to Matthew Algio, the author of Pedestrianism When Watching People Walk Was America's Favorite Spectator Sport.
Coming up next, should Wisconsin raise the minimum wage? The Wisconsin survey asked that question. We'll ask what you think coming up after the news. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.